Welcome to the 98th episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts, Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, our topic is Deadpool, Wade Wilson's War by Dwayne Trzynski. And now, the cast begins.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. This is episode 98, in which we talk about Deadpool Wade Wilson's War from 2010. It's a four-issue miniseries by Dwayne Trzynski, and the penciler is Jason Pearson. This is me, David, talking, and I'm here with Jen.
Hey!
And Andy Swizzlesticks Weiglin.
Yeah, what up? Best nickname ever!
Yeah, apparently. But nobody named Swizzlesticks wrote this comic. It's just Andy.
I'm going home after this, and I'm renaming my characters and MMOs to Swizzlesticks.
Yeah, we'll see.
I have Swizzlesticks and Fury Cakes. It's great. So, did you guys like this?
Yeah, it's okay.
So, I mean, I read all four issues last night, and at the end I was like, what the fuck is this?
See, the end didn't do that to me. I was like, what the fuck is this until issue 4? And then I was like, oh, okay. It's trite, but it makes more sense.
Yeah. So one thing we should point out is this is out of continuity.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
This is definitely an out of continuity comic. I don't think that, because, like, for example, Domino is a mutant. She's not a part of Weapon X.
Okay.
And I'm not 100% sure whether Bullseye is or not.
Weapon X?
Yeah. Deadpool is, and I don't think Silver Sable is either. But, yeah, this is definitely out of continuity.
Okay. I was going to say, I didn't think Domino was... I remember seeing Domino in an X-Men uniform.
Yeah, she's actually part of X-Force, who...
They're the murdering X-Men, right?
Yeah, they're the murder X-Men. Yeah. So, that's important. That's an important thing to keep in mind when reading this comic.
Yeah. Okay, good to know. Now I need to reframe everything in my mind.
Yeah.
But I was going to say, the last two episodes we talked about how Deadpool is like, breaks the fourth wall. And I think he does it like once in all the 10 issues that we read.
Well, there's a part in Secret Invasion where he says, with the pouches part, where he's talking to Rob Liefeld.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, that happens, but it seems more, it seems more on the nose, more direct, less subtle. Whereas in this, it's a lot more subtle. He doesn't turn, look straight at you through the panel and say, hey, reader, what up? How's it going, Rob Liefeld? Yeah. You know, it's more just like the narration flows 20 years back in time in what seems like a totally non-linear way, but he's saying it in his recollection from the 20s, and then he has his other people in the 20s, or 20 years ago, reacting to what he says in the courtroom. Like, it's the non-linearity part of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the senator. Benny? Benny is acting as proxy for the audience here, whereas a lot of the time, I mean, we did get the direct, like, right, Rob thing, but we've also seen him kind of talking to us, but maybe talking to himself in a really unclear way. This gives him someone to talk to directly because it's framed in a way where he has to be telling a story to someone specific that is not us. So,
yeah. But I like the way that the fourth wall breaking happened here, and I think I liked it, even though the joke was better in Secret Invasion.
Yeah.
I think I like this better. This seems smarter to me somehow.
Well, this one, I think, I agree with you. And I think it's because it kind of is like questioning is, you know, how is Deadpool just a crazy person or, I don't know. It makes the comic more interactive.
Yeah, this breaks the fourth wall and you find out that it does it in a way that makes sense given the frame of the story. Like,
yeah.
If it's all just made up and he's talking to himself, then there's no wall to break. It's just all in his head anyway. It's all self-contained.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was really interesting that it was a little unclear whether he imagined this or this was literally the comic that he drew, that he had produced at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of, I mean, obviously it's the, it was all a dream.
Yeah.
Which, I know a lot of people hate that, but it didn't bother me here for some reason. And it made a lot more sense, too, because he's like, you know, the whole delusion is that he's a superhero, and then he's, like, in the superhero comic. So he's actually fairly self-aware of his own delusions.
Well, it was phrased at the end to the reader, like, you can believe this, that it's real, or you cannot. You know, like, mm-hmm. you can choose to be like, okay, what's really going on? Is the farce here that he's crazy, or is the farce here that he's actually Deadpool? You know, and not to say that Deadpool's sane, but, like, it's posed, it's not posed directly, oh, he was all dreaming. It's posed, he could have been dreaming, or he could be getting away in a Lamborghini! Like,
it just seems like that final frame, though, takes the scene, and it's like, no, he's crazy.
But then why have, like, 2 pages of going, I don't know! Like, that seems like, if the reveal is going to be, oh, he dreamt it all, you know? Like, why dick around with it in a Lamborghini?
Maybe it's to show
pages?
That the depth of Deadpool's insanity. Maybe it's to kind of say, even he isn't 100% clear. Because it's him breaking the fourth wall talking to the reader, right? And he's the one presenting this kind of like, I don't know. But then there's no contradiction. There's nothing to that contradicts the him in the insane asylum.
Yeah, and...
And we have, like agents acting in the real world. Because Deadpool is in both worlds, right? Mm-hmm. He's in the real world, and that's where he's talking to the senator. And then there's his description of events, which is unreliable.
Mm-hmm.
But then we have kind of reliable sources that are from outside of both, which is like the shots of the...
In J-Corp.
Yeah, but see, even that, like, well, see, now I'm confusing myself, right?
But that
yeah,
is
now
also
I'm confusing myself,
head.
Too, because, yeah.
Well, it seemed like some of it was in, like, the secret government program, but then some of the hospital stuff was actually insane asylum and we didn't mm-hmm. know it, and then it flashes back to it, or like, I guess what gets me though is that the orderly who wheels away Deadpool at the end
looks like
Senator Benny, so that really was like the nail in the coffin for me that this must be a dream. That, and it's like the last panel, it has the most impact. It's like the thesis of the comic at that point. And I don't know. It made no sense.
Well, there's also the things, too, is like the satellite shots where he tries to explain it away. He looks like... he looks the way he does in the hospital, like the bandages and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That, to me, it seems like it gives more credence to him being a crazy person. Because where he's... So in his imagination... When he explains all the Merc missions they go on, he has his costume on.
Mm-hmm.
But in his dream, where he is, where reality is being shown to him, he's dressed in the bandages.
The bandages, yeah, and not in his costume.
Right. Mm. So I guess what I mean is that there's 2 versions where he's dressed a certain way, and there's only 1 version where he's dressed in his costume, so maybe it's like majority rules type of thing.
So we're actually getting, are we getting two or three points of view here? Is one him in costume going off being the good mercenary, and the other him being actually really fucking crazy, you know, like him in bandages being a mercenary, and it's just those two, and now at the end we see him going crazy from being the bandages mercenary, or do we have 3 points of view here?
I think there are 3, and within those are nested a couple, because he's telling his story. And even within his own telling as him in costume as Deadpool, we see 2 different tellings that seem to actually be coming from him and not the special services dudes, or special projects guys.
The J-Corp guys.
The J-Corp guys, where we see him as the loyal soldier, and then like as the chicken shit guy. You know, who's afraid of needles, and those are paired together. And that almost sounds like he's saying, like, well, was I loyal, or was I not? You'll never know, haha. So, it's like, I think there's three lines of narrative here, and then a couple of them are actually broken down into two separate realities. This needs a chart.
See, but yeah, that reading is less satisfying for me.
I know.
Because I would much rather have it be like, there is costume Deadpool and there's bandaged Deadpool, and bandaged Deadpool has been going crazy the entire time, and then at the end you see him, he actually lost all of his shit. And there's breaks in time in there, and it doesn't line up in a linear fashion the way that you want it to, but you see the end result of what this man actually is. And that sort of question that's been thread all the way out between those two, like, and I love that stuff from him and the needle, like him portraying himself as a soldier and then you actually seeing him as what he really was as a soldier, like to see how those two fall in line, and then you see the end result of one versus the end result of his fantasy. And I think that makes sense, because you get Lamborghini Deadpool and you get Asylum Deadpool, and it's good and linear, and you can see, and it's, then it really is decide between the two. But if there is that third one, and it's like, the entire thing was a framed double narrative, ha-ha! Then that's not as solid writing, I feel like. I feel like that's just, that is the unsatisfying, and it was all a dream.
I think it really hinges on the one scene where it fades to white, and he's like, you know, he's threatening the J-Corps guys.
Yeah.
And then he's like, oh, who, them? And then he explains it away in one page with, what's actually kind of word vomit on his part. Like, there's so much text here. And I feel like that's, even if it explains it well, it's so over-explained. Because he just says so much, and it's like, why not have it play out through the pictures? You're writing a comic here.
Yeah. Yeah, you have this wonderful visual medium, and instead you fade to white. Yeah.
I mean, I just feel like there's so much opportunity to show the difference fairly clearly to your reader in a creative manner, the difference between what we should perceive as reality and Deadpool's delusions or whatever, or, you know, if they're the same thing, and there's no artistic difference in them either, so that made it harder to figure it out.
See, but this is where you could really maximize David's reading of the comic, right? Where the murkiness between the two and the third is so muddied together that it puts you in Deadpool's mind, whereas he's completely lost touch with reality, and within his own lack of reality, there's two different realities that conflict each other, and it's just shattered reality all over the motherfucking place. And I love if it would do that more consistently, right? Like, if all throughout this you see just like a single unexplained panel of guy in bandages sitting there, right? And you do see that, but it's not, it's in a way that's consistent with Bandages Deadpool mercenary, and not crazy third frame narrative Deadpool, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you see frame narrative drooling Deadpool, like, that's how you knew, because he was straight up just drooling on himself. Mm-hmm. Like, if you just see two or three frames just, like, flashed in of drooling Deadpool, then you're like, what the fuck is this? And then at least it feels like it's been seeded throughout. You know,
yeah.
It feels like it's been there the entire time, and you just didn't know why it was there. You didn't get it. But then, at the end, you find out that's the point in the narrative that Deadpool is relating to you through this comic book, where he has full realization of what he is. And he quickly comes back away from that. Like, just a little thing. I mean, it didn't have to be that, but just like a little thing. I love that reading, and I just wish I could put it in there, but I can't find it the way I want it.
Yeah, I think part of the dissatisfaction stems from this idea that, like, it's okay to trick your reader. You can't do it where it's, like, out of nowhere, ha-ha, tricked. You have to make your reader feel clever. And we don't feel clever because there was nothing we can go back, or we don't even feel like we should have been clever, because we can't go back and be like, oh, it was there.
There weren't any, like, breadcrumbs or little Easter eggs hidden throughout, right?
I am not a clever reader. If they had done that in this comic, what I had suggested, I would not have figured it out. But like you said, I want to at least feel like the writer was clever, or feel like somebody was clever.
Yeah, see, I mean, I think, thinking about how we interact together on this podcast, if there had been those little breadcrumbs along the way, we would have discovered them in our discussion, and we would have been, like, it would have been satisfying.
Yeah.
But it's not. Like you guys have been saying this time, you know, we're... It's not like, oh man, I can't believe we missed that thing. It's like, well, these things happened in this order, and now this is how it ends. And it's there's not There's no logical conclusion.
Yeah.
The way it ends doesn't wrap up what we had seen. It's like this story, and then the fade to white page, and it's like this stopgap in between the first 3¾ issues, and then we get these last couple panels where it's like we're supposed to think, oh well, this is how it was happening all along, and like you said, it's like we were kind of duped.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually looking now at that panel where Deadpool is getting shot at in the Senate chambers during the inquest, and he just goes, "Stop, all Matrix," like Neo style. And I think that's supposed to make you think, like, what's going on? He's not Magneto. He can't do this. So, and then the bullets just float there, right? And
yeah.
It makes you...
He's in the Matrix.
It makes you think, like, okay, he's totally unreliable, because now it's just, like... But that shift in narrative is abrupt, and it's not explained, and then this shift in the narrative doesn't tie in to the later shift in the narrative. So although we're told that reality is coming unhinged right here, we don't understand it in the context of, like, a lack of reality later in.
I think the problem with that is because...
That was smart.
The problem is because we never see anything like this until here, and you can easily chalk this up to Deadpool's a crazy person.
Yeah.
So this is just him imagining this.
Because we've seen him do this with, like, reporters. He thinks he's being interviewed for, like, a TV show.
Yeah, and there's, like, Care Bears and shit
or,
in the background.
Like, Skrull asking for his autograph when they're actually charging him. So, like, you know, it makes sense that he would have the mental reaction instead of getting shot 100 times to be like, no, I'm going to imagine it didn't happen like that. Because that's unpleasant.
And because we're not necessarily sure that this is, we're being, seeing this real time. Because this is, the whole time we've been, somebody's been retelling the story.
Mm-hmm.
We're watching a retelling of the story. So we can't assume that this is happening in real time. Even though, in relation to the other events we've seen so far, this is the present. It's not, we're not 100% sure.
I think the problem here is this is the point where the whole time we've been told, like, Benny is listening to this story, he's the audience, and we suddenly zoom out to, like, the shot where you see that you're the audience and not
mm-hmm.
Benny, and then you're like, since when was I part of this? You know, don't drag me into it. Like,
when was I supposed to have agency in the storytelling?
Mm-hmm.
It's abrupt, I think it's the problem.
All that said, I really do think this is the best costume I've ever seen Deadpool in.
That's good.
I love General Deadpool. With the, like, little smiley faces on his collar.
Yeah.
Some just, like, funny. Shitload of medals. Because why not? If you're going to be a fake general, get as many medals as you can find. Fuck it.
I love how he's also wearing, like, 3 or 4 masks.
Yes.
Right?
Well, he rips off one mask,
and
then the second one is Michael
Jackson.
And then he rips off another that mask, and then it's another Deadpool mask. And then he lifts it up, and he looks like Terminator Red Skull.
Yeah.
That was particularly...
I was reading that, I was like, why is his eye glowing red?
This is a pretty gruesome showing of his face. Like, in other instances where we see Deadpool unmasked, he's just very scarred, but he has human features, right?
Mm-hmm.
He has
yeah.
a mouth, nose, and 2 eyes that are the same, and in this one, he's just
this reminded me
looking.
Of Two-Face from
Dark Knight.
From Dark Knight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's, like, so gruesome you don't even want to look at it. But it's on screen and you have to.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think, oh man, you know how he gives the senator that super emotional speech too about how he's hideous now and no one will ever love him and he just wants a kind touch? And that fell through for me too because there was no way to tell that Deadpool had in any way changed his tone and it wasn't just like delivered in his normal way, yet we see the senator have this emotional reaction, and it feels unprecedented,
mm-hmm.
I suppose, or unreasonable.
Definitely, because the senator has been pretty cold to Deadpool this whole time.
Yeah.
So it seems extremely out of place that all of a sudden, now that he's seen Deadpool's scarred face, he is sympathetic. And I don't know, do we even see Deadpool put his mask back on? We must, actually. Yeah, we do.
Yeah. So... It makes you wonder, are we witnessing a problem with reality as told by Deadpool, or is it bumpy writing? And because we can't tell, like, it makes it harder to think that there's something really complex going on here, I think.
Or maybe this was supposed to be a hint that this was not reality. Who knows, right? There's so many things you could attribute this to.
Yeah, I think as you're going along, there's a lot of little hints that the Deadpool in the like council chambers is not reliable.
But see, the thing is, Deadpool is never a reliable narrator. And that's something that it's easy to just go with in the normal Deadpool continuity, like the last two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine that Deadpool is... It's okay that he's not a reliable narrator because we get the two voices in his head and all these other things. And we... In instances where we see Deadpool's imagination, like when he's getting the autographs, or when he sees Pulo Vision in episode one, where it has the point, the scores above the corpse, the Skrull corpses, those are so obviously not reality.
Yeah.
And Deadpool recognizes in we are shown that these are not, it's not reality. We can say, okay, Deadpool, here's a snippet of what Deadpool sees, and everything else is what's happening, right? But in this, we don't get the other voices, right? And it's not clear, it's never clear what... There's no clear delineation between his own imagination and what's really happening.
But I do like that throughout all of this craziness between the two or three different narratives going on here, there is a consistent second figure with Domino. And I really thought that that was neat. Domino is present in all three of these stories, and in all three of these... She's significant to Deadpool. And I love that there's a little giveaway each time. You know, like, in the Senate chambers when he, like, when he sees Domino in the chair. I mean, even though you find out later, oh, it's all a ruse. Like, she's in the chair and she looks like she got roughed up. You know? And no matter how much it's part of the plan, you get that moment where Deadpool lifts his mask up. And you see what is probably actually his face. You know, like, you get that moment of... It feels like actual sincerity coming from Deadpool. When the entire time, when you see that, you can tell nothing else was sincere. You know, and then you see it again at the end when you get Deadpool drooling on himself. There's the woman sitting next to him, looks an awful lot like Domino, drooling on herself. Like, we're all friends in the asylum.
The thing is, she seemed to have, like, that black mask, like the half-mask thing going, too, which was, like, if she was just some random asylum person...
Well, she had a
she had the eye patch.
She had an eye patch, and then maybe she had a black eye or something. It was just maybe. It was shadowed. It was shadowy, I think.
Okay, because it looked like it was Domino, the kind of superhero, rather than woman who looks uncannily like Domino. So then it makes you wonder, like, you know, did they bring the mercenaries back into the facility? What's happening?
Yeah. See, we're never. Well, at least I wasn't sure when I got to the end whether. It's unclear whether Deadpool actually was a mercenary at some point, because he could have been, and then this is just where he ended up because they succeeded in just like lobotomizing them, essentially, right?
Yeah.
And then he's telling his memories to this senator in his mind and making a comic book out of it, because he chooses to remember as him being a superhero, not this mercenary person.
Could be that. I kind of want a more solid answer, or if it's not solid, I want to feel like... I want to have that, like, whoa feeling, you know?
Right. I think the best example of that feeling would be Grant Morrison, usually. Right? Like, Grant Morrison writes a lot of shit that you just can't figure out. He thinks he writes it so that if you're smart and savvy and you really notice things... that you can figure it out, but honest to God, nobody's ever going to figure out the filth. There's no answer to that thing. But, like, even Final Crisis, there's a bunch of stuff in there that's just kind of in there, and who the fuck knows? You can figure some stuff out, but you can't figure other stuff out. But it's fine, because at least it's this kind of crazy, non-sequitur storytelling that if you can't figure it out, it's not like you feel like you were supposed to, or you feel like there's a cleverness that's missing. It's just... Fuck it, wacky!
Yeah.
Fuck it, this is out there. I'm going to be weird. We're being weird today. I'm going to be weird. Let's be weird. Like, here it feels like, fuck it, let's be weird. I'm going to be weird. What did you get out? Why are we weird?
Yeah.
I don't know. Why? Tell me.
Like, it's weird that we're willing to accept a man dressed in a pig carcass as completely normal.
Right?
Yet a man in an insane asylum who seems to, like, have a rational explanation for the reason he told this crazy story, we're like, this is bullshit. You know? It's very odd that we can take whimsy and crazy with a total grain of salt, but the moment they try to explain that crazy to us, we're like, no, back off.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's how I feel about it. I don't know.
Well, what do we think of the art?
Pretty.
Yeah, it's good. I think it's good art. I think it's... It's not inconsistent, but there's, like, I think it changes stylistically in some places. Like, it looks very comic booky most of the time, except the part where when we see his real face, it looks a little too realistic, I think. I think that was a little bit over the top. But I think in general, the art's good. I kind of like how it's kind of grainy.
Yeah. You know, I like the consistency, too, between, like, the comic book stuff's very comic booky, like you said. And then when you see the quote-unquote real, the non-superhero mercenary, like, the art gets more realistic. And then I think it feels super realistic when he takes off his mask. And even though it has a Terminator eye, which is kind of weird, but it's, like, brutally realistic.
That I think it's supposed to be, like, his eye is missing or messed up in some weird way.
Yeah. But, I mean, something about the way that's drawn, that resonates with me in a way that, like, that's him actually perceiving what's under his mask.
Yeah.
Like, whether he's superhero little costume Deadpool, that's what he perceives actually in the mask. Whether he's, you know, IRL Merc Deadpool, you know, like the gritty just bandages out there killing people, that's what he perceives under the bandages. And then the Sane Asylum, I think that's what he perceives being under the bandages.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's super realistic because that's his actual perception.
Yeah. Okay.
Like across whatever crazy point of view we have, I think you get those little moments where the art's way more realistic than it needs to be. And I think those are the moments when that's the actual perception that crosses between all three of these. Fuck. I finally said something smart. Took like a half hour. But yeah, I really like this art. There's some scenes in here that I think really stick in my mind. Like, I really love General Deadpool playing Neo.
That was one of the coolest one-page spreads that we've seen in a while.
It's awesome! Did either one of you guys have a favorite scene?
I don't know. This comic, I don't feel like it had splashy pages and stuff. Nothing really...
No, like, moments stuck out with you? Not even art-wise, just moment.
I don't know. This comic I have... This was a strange experience for me reading a comic. I should say, though, so I ended up reading this on Marvel's digital site. I have some of the issues from this four issue series.
Mm-hmm.
And I stopped getting it partway through. I was like, I don't really like this that much. I don't know. This is, like I said, this is an interesting experience reading it. And I'll get to that more when I rate it. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Any scenes stick out for you?
The thing that really did stick out was that one-page spread with the bullets. Because it was detailed and simple. And it was a really good combination. It was very good art right there.
Yeah, that one, I guess, does stick out to me, too. It's as you're flipping the pages, it's jarring. Because it kind of comes out of nowhere. So, I don't know.
I think it's supposed to do that.
Yeah.
Like, with what I think it was Jen was saying earlier, like, that's the moment when you realize, like, where did he get this power from suddenly? Like, when did he become Magneto? Like, that's when you realize that this is not reality.
Yeah,
it cannot be reality. Maybe you've suspended your disbelief up until this point, but now you need to stop. Get it? Stop.
Yes.
You need to stop. See? So witty, these writers with the comics. Sorry, I almost gave you a spit take there, Jen.
Yep.
So, do we want to rate it?
What if someday we said no, we didn't want to rate it? What would happen? Would we just end the episode?
Yes. I honestly wouldn't know how to react to that. we got to save that. So, okay. Yeah, we'll save that. You'll know when it comes.
I mean, there's some episodes where we don't rate it, but that's because we're reading like a big long
thing. Yeah, it's like a maxi series.
Yeah.
Okay. So you didn't answer the question, though. Did you want to?
Yeah, we'll rate it.
Okay, go ahead.
I could go. I could rate.
All right, make it happen, Kevin.
Man, this one's kind of hard to give a number to. I'll give this one a 3. It feels a little high. Anyways, I'll go with 3. So, like I was saying, this was an interesting experience reading the comic. Because, like I said at the beginning of the episode, when I got to the end, I was like, God damn it, what the fuck just happened? You know? Because it didn't... The story wasn't leading to that.
Yeah.
It wasn't going that direction. So, when I got there, I was like, oh, what the hell? You know? So, it was very... It was kind of a letdown at the end. But it was also so jarring and out of left field that it was like, okay, this is different. So reading it, I thought wasn't that great of an experience. But talking about it, even though I feel like we didn't come to any solid conclusions, was a fun experience too. And the art was pretty good, and you know, I think that. It was a nice try at something, to make something kind of weird. So it's good in that respect. As far as a Deadpool comic goes, I don't like it. This is not what I like out of Deadpool.
Yeah.
When Deadpool was at his like height of popularity, and I had Deadpool all on my pull list at the comic store, it kept to a point where I just was like, never mind, I don't want anything except the main Deadpool title. Because there was like, there's this, and there was Merc with a Mouth, and there was Deadpool Core, and like all these wacky Deadpool team up. And it just was like, it's like, I can see these being entertaining, but none of these things are what I like about Deadpool. And so I just got rid of all of them and just got the main one, which is still going, and none of those little side series still exist. So, 2.5, I think I kind of just rambled there.
That's fine.
Okay. So I guess what my conclusion is, it's a pretty average comic. It's not that great of a Deadpool comic. And if you're going to read it with friends.
Okay, good. Jen?
2.5 as well. This is average. I think part of the problem is that it is complex. And it's being told by a character we know to be like totally unreliable anyway. So it's like I'm trying to follow all these events that, you know, are seemingly unrelated, because he's having to explain to us why they're unrelated, but then, or why they're related. Like, that requires explanation, yet his explanation isn't that solid because he's insane, and then later we find out he might literally be insane, and then there's not alternate, but fractured realities here, and it was just really, like, when I'm reading a comic like this, I just want to be entertained. I read things that make me work my brain, and this wouldn't be something I'd want to pick up to work my brain. And I wanted a more casual reading experience, whereas I had to, like, sit here and think hard about it. Not even to, like, say something neat about it, but to just comprehend it on a basic level, and that was too much work. And I don't think of myself as a lazy reader, either, so I think I'm really saying something with that. David's definitely right. Like, I think this would be a fun comic to, like, have a beer, sit around, and make, like, a nerdy argument about with a few people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what was real? What wasn't? You know, should we like this? Should we not? And I think that actually is, in a lot of ways, the strength of the average, quote-unquote, comic, because, well, if it's in the middle, there are people who are swinging either way on it, and you could have a really good discussion about its merits and, you know, its flaws.
I mean, it's true. This is some of the hardest episodes we've ever recorded were the ones where we all gave the comic 5.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is great. Nothing more to discuss. It's just awesome.
Yeah, and it's... Honestly, it's way easier to bash something than to praise it. Because you can praise things, but then you sound like you're gushing. When you bash a thing, if you can make it remotely, like, constructive, it feels like you're saying something fairly interesting about the work. I'm not trying to bash this. I just feel like I've read other Deadpool that I enjoyed a lot more, and this, if I had had it as an introduction to the character, wouldn't necessarily have made me go back to my comic shop and buy more issues. So.
That's a good barometer.
Yep, 2.5.
All right, Swizzle 6, your turn.
Wasn't expecting it that time, actually. I'm going to give it a 2.5 as well. I feel like... What? Why are you shaking your head at me? Okay, fine. I'll give it a 2.
No, right? You can give it 2.5.
Okay, I'll give it 2.5. I feel like if Deadpool from last week was... If Deadpool from last week was like the Michael Bay, right? Or like the Fast and the Furious, right? This is like the M. Night Shyamalan of Deadpool, right? But better than that, you know? Like, not Signs or The Village M. Night Shyamalan. More like Sixth Sense Shyamalan, which is, I guess, the only Shyamalan that was any good.
No, Unbreakable was also good.
That's right. Sorry, Unbreakable. Unbreakable was great. How did I fucking forget about that one? This is more like, at the end, it's a twist. But more non-sequitur than that. Because I think the problem is, if this were Sixth Sense, then we could go, oh man, it was there the whole time, we just didn't see it. Here at the end, the writer goes, it's a twist, and we go, oh man, the fuck?
Well, he's like, it's a twist, and here's why.
Yeah.
And then even the explanation doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And so I think it's more that sort of vein. It's like, I'm going to fuck with your sense of reality, and then try to explain it all at the end, but not really... In a way that you want, or that is necessarily entirely satisfying, because it all just happens at the end in one big what did you say, word dump at the end?
Word vomit.
Yeah, word vomit.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like David said too, it's at least fun to sit and talk about, if nothing else. And it's only 4 issues.
And it's certainly not. Sorry, Andy, to step on you. It's certainly not a bad comic.
No, exactly. That's 2.5 is totally average. It's not like this is. Fuck, Spawn, or Batman Odyssey, or Blue Water Comics, or... Oh god, what was the other really bad one? Rise and Fall?
Yes, Arsenal.
Arsenal?
Yeah.
Oh god. So horrible. It's almost as bad as the Rape comics.
I like what Jen said. Wait, are you done?
Yeah, I'm done. Dude, when the Rape comics come out, I'm done.
Like what Jen said, she called it... you used the term casual reading experience.
Something like that.
Yeah, I feel like the main... Deadpool is, to me, when I'm getting ready to read it or dipping into it, I expect it to be a casual reading experience, and Wade Wilson's War was not that. And I think that's why I was dissatisfied. And that's probably why I gave it a 2.5. Like, last week I gave Dark Reign a 3, and I think I rated... I don't remember what I gave Secret Invasion, but I think I gave it higher than a 3.
Yeah.
But the reason Dark Reign got a 3 is because... It was more of the same, but not necessarily a bad way. Wade Wilson's War was not the same at all. Deadpool wasn't even crazy in the same way, and he wasn't that funny.
Yeah, you know what though? I think that's an interesting thing with this comic is because it's a 4-issue mini, right? Dwayne Swierczynski could have picked any character, right? But he picked Deadpool, and I think you pick that character because going in as a reader. You know you're getting an unreliable narrator. You know Deadpool's crazy. You know he has schizophrenia. You know the version of reality you're going to get is not real reality consistently. You know he's unreliable. And so in that respect, it's a good choice. But on the other side of the coin, it's a bad choice because everybody goes into Deadpool looking for that casual experience, like you said. So like, you need a schizophrenic, non-reliable character to narrate this. But not somebody that's shits and giggles funny like Deadpool.
I think it could have been a character whose schizophrenia made them a dark character, because Deadpool's insanity makes him very lighthearted.
Or even somebody who goes either way, because you know the whole Neo Matrix stuff that comes from Deadpool's personality. The whole him getting away in a Lamborghini with Domino comes from Deadpool's personality. There's a lot of scenes here that hinge on Deadpool's personality. But the story hinges on him being fucking crazy. Yeah. And you knowing that going in.
Or even the art, because the words in the art can tell us different things. That's the beauty of comics.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't use that to their advantage.
Yeah. Okay. So like I promised last week, at the end of this week's episode, we were going to tell you guys what was coming up next. And what we're going to do for the 100th and the 2-year episode. And We're going to do that as soon as we're done with the rest of the outro, so keep listening. So, if you want to look that stuff up after this episode, it will be online at www.atomicpowersupercast.com. You can ask us about what we've got coming up on Twitter,
which is at APSupercast or twitter.com/APSupercast.
You can also ask us via email,
which is atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
And you can always please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
And what you need to do, if you want to know what we're going to do coming up, go to facebook.com/APSupercast. We've actually created an event for the 100th episode. We're going to have a couple people over. We're going to hang out. We're going to drink. And we're just going to sit in a big room with a couple mics and bullshit about comics for a while. Record it. Maybe we'll be a little drunk. Maybe not. Who knows? Probably. I'm going to try to be.
All right.
It's more fun to talk about comics that way.
I will. I'm a lightweight.
All right. Cool. So that's what we're going to do for the 100th episode. For the two-year episode, we're going to watch something. Some crappy movie. We haven't quite pinned it down yet. So hop on that Facebook page or the Twitter. Let us know what you want us to watch. We're debating between, what was it, Superman 4?
Yeah, Quest for Peace. Is that what it's called? But no, it's like something comic book related. If you have something that you want us to talk about, just like Andy said, post it up on Facebook or send us a tweet.
Yes. And apparently through the research I have discovered, or actually I think Jen is the one that knew it, there is a Nick Fury movie starring David Hasselhoff. And God, I wish it were easier to find because that sounds magnificent.
I actually remember watching that when it appeared on Fox. It was a made-for-TV movie.
That's and the best kind of movie.
I have no idea. I cannot recall what it was about. There's actually also a... Fox also did a movie called Generation X, mm-hmm. which was a made-for-TV movie about the X-Men.
Oh, God.
And that might exist. I think that might be on YouTube in its entirety.
Nice.
So maybe we'll do that. Who knows? Like I said, if there's something you want us to watch, let us know.
So that's all coming up. But we got one episode to put out between now and the 100th. This is episode 98. So for 99, we're going to read Ami Kami, which is a digital-only release that DC was doing. And there's this line of statuettes, right? Of like Wonder Woman and, I don't know, all these female characters, Batgirl and everything. Except they're like the anime versions of these DC characters. And these statues sold so well that DC decided, let's make a comic book and create an alternate world around these pervy little statues. And so what's great is that the team that did Power Girl that we like so much, Jimmy Palmiotti, Justin Gray, and Amanda Conner stepped up and said, fuck, we'll do it. Sounds awesome. And so it was digitally this only, and it got to be so popular that now they're going to do a print version and they're going to put it in stores. So we're going to read Wonder Woman 1-3, which is Ami Kami, like the first set of three that came out. And then we're going to read Batgirl 1-3. And so they're doing like a set of three, and then that character story is done. They're going to do another set of three, and then that character story is done. And there's sort of a big theme that ties through all of them, but they're going to do as many as they can. So that's going to be issue number 99. You can get that on the DC Comics ad. You can get it on Comixology.com. You know, tons of digital comic book places. And after that, we'll do issue 100, where y'all are welcome to come and drink with us. Just RSVP to the page on Facebook. And then we're going to watch some shitty movie. It's going to be fucking fun.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think the worst comic movie I've ever seen was X-Men 3.
Yeah. I bought this set of DVDs back in the day at Costco.
Yeah.
Which includes Fantastic Four, Daredevil, and Elektra.
Oh.
So I've got some bad ones in the DVD case.
You know, Daredevil's bad, but it's not.
No, it wasn't that bad.
I can live the rest of my life without ever watching Elektra again.
Have you guys seen the Thomas Jane Punisher?
Yes.
Mm-mm.
It's got John Travolta as the bad guy, and it sounds like it's going to be a bad movie, but it's actually pretty good.
It's actually good. I think. Oh, now that you mentioned it, Fantastic Four 2.
Don't even Rise of Zorro.
Oh my god! See, there's the worst product promotion ever.
See, I don't think we could watch that one because I'll just rage at it at the end.
That would be pretty funny.
I don't know.
There's a scene. This is my favorite scene in all of comic book movies where Reed Richards builds a hover car, and then he rolls up with it to pick everybody up, and it's got a Dodge logo on the front. And he like stretches into frame and points at the Dodge logo with his stretchy thumb and says, "That's right, it's got a Hemi."
That's not even the thing I hate the most about that movie.
Like, why?
Oh my God.
He built it in his garage at home. Why would he put a Dodge emblem on it?
Because it's got a Hemi.
He could put some future engine in it. Why does he need an engine from now? He's the future guy.
He's dumb.
Because
Dodge pays Fox a lot of money.
It's the worst nonsensical product placement ever, and I love it. And I think it happens in front of Silver Surfer, too.
Also, guys, this is a bit of a tangent, but if you want to see awesome product placement in a movie, watch Demolition Man, because that movie
yes.
did it the best.
Oh, my God. By far the best.
And on that note...
on that note, we're gonna take off, everybody.
Yeah.
So, until next week.
See you later.
Goodbye. Bye.
Demolition Man does it the best.
Hell yeah, it does.
Taco Bell is the only franchise that survived the fast food wars or something like that. Have you seen Demolition Man?
No.
You should watch it. It's such
amazing.
It's such a good movie. It seems like horrible and it's so campy and stuff, but it's freaking great.
Campy in the best way.
Wait, how do we want to? Okay.